So let's then continue with what we started last time and also have some question and answers that let's see how many questions we have. Otherwise, I have some more examples to show you. So again, we are trying to learn how to use Mathematica, because Mathematica is an extremely versatile tool that allow us to compute in a very efficient way, find patterns, find structures, find new identities that we didn't know existed, find often new formulations of theories. It really is crucial nowadays in many fields to use either Mathematica or Maple or some symbolic computation software in fields where you are trying to rediscover new ways of rewriting existing physics and trying to understand how to go beyond what exists and what are the fundamental underlying physics. We are one of the common themes in high energy theoretical physics, for example, is the emergence that we have been observing over the last years, is the emergence of a dramatic simplification of the final result over the intermediate computations. So you will learn the standard way of, say, computing how particles interact, which is by studying what are called Feynman diagrams. Feynman diagrams is nothing but some simple generalization of what you heard in quantum mechanics or what you know in quantum mechanics that you sum over histories of particles. Here you sum also over histories of particles, you sum over the history of an electron that moves in space-time, another electron that moves in space-time, and then they shoot a photon at each other, the photon can interact with more electrons and so on. And you sum over all these possible histories where particles move in space-time, split, merge, emit stuff, and so on. And this, it's a beautiful formalism. It simplifies dramatically the computations of summing over all these interactions. But still, the more histories you start taking into account to make your processes more precise and to make your predictions better and better, the more complicated the computation becomes. Very soon, if you use traditional methods, it will start taking hundreds of pages of computations that you necessarily have to do with a computer. But that's not the remarkable fact. The remarkable fact is that you have pages and pages of computations, then the final result is beautiful. It fits like in half a line. It's some extremely elegant expression. So one common theme in research in high energy physics is trying to understand how come. Feynman diagrams are great. Quantum field theory that you didn't even learn is awesome. But there ought to be reformulations of the physics that we know that explain why the results, why is everything so beautiful despite the fact that we have often to suffer a lot. And say, to do research in these kind of things, it's unthinkable not to use Mathematica. You really need to stare at many results, try to find maybe this result is like this because of some analytic properties, because it has the only singularities that it could have, but then you have to use Mathematica to probe and to check if these kind of conjectures and guesses and hinges are correct or not. So it really is a tool that I strongly recommend. Very good. So this lecture, I would propose it to be more interactive. I don't have anything prepared that will basically take 2 hours, I think. I have a few exercises that we could do, a few examples that we could. A few more examples that I could show you so that you have some more examples of how it works. Or we could jump directly to questions and answers, as you prefer. So I saw that some of you sent me some questions, but it was yesterday night where I didn't have my computer, so I didn't manage to have a look at them. But you could ask them now, or I can answer them during this weekend. Or if you prefer, I could try to solve one or two small examples before we start with the questions. What do you prefer? Examples? OK, so let's try to solve one more example. Did anyone have a look at the notebook that I put on the wiki? On the last exercise, on the last example, for example, on solving some partial differential equations? So maybe let me show you how you can solve some partial differential equation in Mathematica. So let's solve the following equation. Suppose you have a field that phi, can you see? That takes values in a plane, x and y. And that obeys the following equation, second derivative with respect to x of phi plus second derivative with respect to y of phi plus exponential of 2 phi equal to 0. And now I will fix the signs. I have no idea what the signs are. So I will check and tell you which signs we want. Okay, so it's almost perfect. So this is an equation called Liouville equation. So it's an important equation in theoretical physics. It appears in many instances. It appears, for example, in string theory in less than 26 dimensions, for example. It appears as describing curvature of surfaces. It appears as describing minimal surfaces. It appears in some called conformal field theories, which are some theories which have no scalars. It's a very popular equation. Now, you see, this is a partial differential equation. This equation is very useful because on the one hand, it's very non-trivial. It's nonlinear. You see, there is a field phi, and it's quite nonlinear. On the other hand, it has exact solutions. So can someone tell me what would be the exact solution without this exponential? What would be the solution of this differential equation? What's the general solution of But in general, the solution of this problem is that phi is a function of x plus iy, any function, plus any wave moving in the opposite direction. It's like wave equation. So whatever function you give, that is a function of x plus y, and whatever function is a function of x minus y, this solves this equation, because this is nothing but dx plus idy times dx minus idy. So it kills either of the waves, the total quadratic operator. Now, Liouville equation is a remarkable generalization of Laplace equation, which is the second one, in the sense that it also has an exact solution. But it's richer. It's more complicated than this. And the general solution of Liouville equation is the following. Phi is, let's say, which is the case, for example, that I don't remember exactly what it is, but we will use Mathematica to fix. I remember, imagine that there is some constant, and then log 1 minus some function of x plus iy times some other function of x minus iy over the product of derivatives, maybe with some other constant. Okay? So the claim is that Liouville equation, we have to fix these constants carefully, but if we do, this would be the general solution of Liouville equation. Okay? So the goal of what I'm going to do now is, first, check. So this is something very useful in Mathematica. We did some analytic work. Say, imagine we derived analytically this expression. Now we want to check. And one of the great things in Mathematica, as I was telling, is that we don't do mistakes, sign mistakes, and so on. So suppose we did this computation in the paper, and we found here 1/2 or minus 1/2. We are not totally sure. It's much simpler to now, OK, we did all the hard and conceptual work. Now just plug here and fix the sign, and that's it. Instead of making sure we didn't do any mistakes several times, and then maybe we did. So the first thing is to check this equation. The second thing is, OK, let's solve it numerically using the fact that we know the analytic solution. And then we compare with the analytic solution, because, I mean, it's good to do some numerical methods when you have something exact to compare with. Then, if you want, the numerical method will allow you to replace this by any function of phi. Then you don't have analytic solution. If you have just a general nonlinear partial differential equation, there's no way you can have an exact solution, but you can use the same numerical method. OK. So what we are doing is partial differential equations. And let's make a title of type 2, for example. OK. And then let's create a subsection called analytics. Again, we have this choice of either you type or you just watch while I type, and then I put a notebook online, whatever you prefer. So if you prefer to type, let me know so that I'll do it slower. Otherwise, I'll just do it at some speed that you can understand, but probably not type at the meantime, as you prefer. What do you prefer? Type? Okay, so let's do it at some level that you can type. So first we want to write phi. So phi is ugly. How do we write phi in a nice way? Very good. Escape, escape. So we click escape. These three dots appear. Then we write phi. And then escape again. Okay? For phi, it's actually probably pH is enough. So you lose 1 nanosecond if you don't write the I. Sorry? Just F works? Wow, now I feel like losing. I lost a lot of my time. Very good. I should have used F always. Okay. Then we have phi, x, and y. Okay. This is our function. Now on derivatives. Now, let's do the following. Derivative. This is how derivative works. With respect to x two times. So let's check that this is the correct syntax I'm going to show you. So for example, derivative of, say, x cosine of x with respect to x. And let's then run derivative two times. Okay, and we can check the output. And this looks indeed like the first derivative of x cosine. So it gives cosine minus x sine. It's good. We still remember that derivative of cosine is minus sine. And derivative of x cosine, second derivative gives this. Everything seems to make sense. It's OK. Now, this is kind of ugly, right? To have this notation, it's ugly. We saw that we can make fractions, we can make everything, and so on. So there is a nicer way of writing this. Actually, there is a nice way of writing, of converting ugly expressions into nice expressions, which is the following. You select an expression. For example, I selected this. You can also select the cell by clicking on the right, but I just underlined the full expression by double-clicking on the expression. Now that the expression is selected, you go to Format. No, you don't go to Format, sorry. You go to Cell, Convert to, and you see up there, traditional form is ticked, right? There is traditional form, which is the form that I'm using. But you click again on traditional form. OK? And when I click again on traditional form, you see this derivative became this. OK? Standard form, sorry, standard form. Sorry, standard form. I click again on standard form, and the expression becomes nice. OK? This. Very good. There is, of course, a shortcut to do that. So let me do it here on this upper cell. I just select and convert. And that is Command-Shift-N. So for you, probably Control-Shift-N or Control-N. So that's, you see, if you don't know the shortcut, you have a way to know. You just see here, convert cell, standard form. And you see, it's written there what the shortcut is on the right. So for me, it tells me Shift-Command-N. Right? On the right of standard form. So this is very useful. But often you have, for example, something like, imagine you have derivative of x over x squared plus 1 comma x. Right? This couldn't be uglier. But now let's just select and convert, you see? So what a big difference it is. So I wrote this in the simple notation. Then I selected Control-Shift-N, and it becomes immediately extremely nice, right? Some nice derivative of some fraction. OK? And of course, both give exactly the same. OK. Very good. Can I keep just the second derivative of phi and erase everything else? Yes? Does someone want me to keep the rest? No? Very good. So let's erase everything and keep only. OK. Second derivative. Now we copy, and we write the second derivative with respect to y. And then we add exponential of minus 2 phi of x and y. Okay? This is our Liouville equation. And we put a semicolon at the end because we don't want to see the output. We don't want, of course, this is the output. But OK, this is exactly what I wrote. I don't care about this output. So I just put semicolon. That does not mean that Mathematica did not compute. Mathematica did evaluate this expression. She just did not show me. So there is a difference between putting a semicolon or putting a two dots. Putting a two dots means Mathematica will not evaluate. She will wait till I run LEC to evaluate what's on the right. The fact that I put semicolon, this was one of the questions I was asked. The fact that you put semicolon means that Mathematica evaluated but did not show the output. I trust her. I know she knows what LEC is. I also know that she knows, and everyone is happy. Yes. Ah, yes, yes. Why did I write X comma Y? Very good. Yeah, Y comma 2, of course. Yeah, this does not make any sense. You are asking whether I can square a partial derivative? No, I don't think you can. Yes. Yes. Okay, very good. Okay, this is good. Now let's define our function. Let's call it phi again, but say phi zero, which is our numerical solution, our analytic solution, which is a constant times log of 1 minus some function of g plus iy times a function of x minus iy. I don't need this parenthesis. And then I select, I click control slash to make a fraction. Otherwise, you know, you can put brackets, do everything ugly, and then at the end convert. Times some other constant that I don't know, let me call it d. Times derivative of function, I can really use g prime, as we like very much. Or I can, yeah, g prime is fine. F prime of x minus iy. Okay? So again, of course, I can see the output, but I don't care about the output. Okay. Now we want to check that this is a solution of the equation. So we want to pick the equation and put phi zero instead of phi. Yeah? Very good. How do you propose to do this? So please finish typing and then tell me how do you propose to check if phi zero is a solution or not. Sorry, there is a mistake. Well, what's the mistake in this input? What did I do wrong here? I forgot the arguments in the left-hand side. I forgot to say this is a function of x and y. Okay, very good. So it's a good excuse to introduce something. Now this will give me an error message. Why? Why will this give me an error message? So let's run and see that there is an error message. So there is an error message because notice what I did. First, I defined phi zero to be something, right? So imagine I do the following. I say f equal, no, not f, because f appears below. Imagine I do blah, blah, equal 5, right? Blah, blah is 5. Now, what does it mean to say blah, blah of x? It means 5 of x. So, of course, I cannot say that 5 of x equal to x. That doesn't make sense. 5 of x, 5 is 5. I cannot define the function 5 as now I cannot suddenly turn 5 into a function. You see? So what's the solution to this? So I screwed up. I defined phi zero. I ran phi zero once without the argument. So now she thinks that phi zero is what is on the right. And now I try to say what is on the right now is like a function of x and y is equal to something. So of course she is complaining. It doesn't make any sense. It's the same thing as before. 5 of x and y cannot be equal to x plus y. So what's my solution? Sorry? Unset it. Right. Very good. I'm glad no one proposed to restart the computer. So indeed, the best is clear. Oh, let's clear the variable phi zero. Okay, and now, okay, now I can set. Very good. If this explanation was too fast, again, please ask me and I'll be happy to repeat. Very good. But this is something that you will receive a lot. You forget to put some arguments, then you run, then you receive an error message. Clear the variable, clear the function, and try again. It's always, almost always the problem with trying to say that 5 of x is x, something like this. Very good. So how do I now, you want to replace phi by phi 0. So of course, what I have to do starts with slash dot. It will be a replacement. But this is actually a sophisticated one, I think. So I want you to guess, what should I do now? What should I replace now? Come on, someone, one guess. What should I do now? So again, can you... So you propose phi goes to phi naught of x and y, like this. But let's see, what will this do? We can do it, but before putting phi naught, let's put f naught. But this will do the following. It will replace wherever you find a phi, you will put an f0 of x and y. But you see, then it becomes f0 of x and y, derivative to 0 of x and y. And here it was phi of x and y. Now it's f0 of x and y of x and y. Right? It's something else. Now we are saying that it's like a function that depends on x on four variables. X and y, say, has two indices, and x and y has two variables, for example. It's not exactly what we want. So what do you propose instead of this? So of course, if I put here phi, it will give some awful mess. It will give log. It will give this thing as function of x and y, which doesn't make sense. So what do you propose instead? Someone. Very good. So you are saying put phi of y and something, this, goes to phi 0 of x and y. So here is what she did. She did replace in the first one this exponential of minus 2 phi. She replaced by this log, and exponential of log gives us the power. So this worked. But the next two did not work. Right? You see, the other two didn't work. Sorry? Let's see if that's a problem. But it's not. No. Sorry? Drop the arguments. Very good. That's the solution. Why? Very good. Because indeed, what we want to say is that the function phi is now the function phi naught. So why isn't Mathematica doing this replacement? So the rule is, Mathematica, if you find this following tree, which is a tree that has phi as the header, and then two branches, whatever the branches are, right? Remember. Replaced by this other tree, which has phi naught as the header, and then x and y as the tree. But let's see, do we have only these trees there? Let's see what LX is. Let's see what this guy is, this second derivative. Sorry. I just want to copy this second derivative. Let's see how Mathematica thinks of the second derivative. What's the tree of this? Okay, this is a good example. You see, the tree of this is how Mathematica represents, but actually full form will be better. Let me zoom out for a minute. She doesn't think of this as phi with arguments x and y. She thinks of this as phi 2 comma 0 with arguments x and y. So second derivative of phi. So first she computes the function, which is the second derivative of phi, and then it has arguments x and y. So of course, it's not finding this tree. But actually the best way, full form is always more powerful. And when we see full form, we see exactly what's happening. Let's see full form of phi of x and y and of the second derivative and compare both. So you see, in the second line, you have phi, which when you ask Mathematica to see in full form, she displaces in this uglier form, phi of x and y. But here it says it's derivative 2 comma 0 of phi, and there is an extra parenthesis here. And then these full objects, you see, as arguments x and y, right? So of course, if I say find phi of x and y and replace by something, okay. Here she found phi of x and y. Where is phi of x and y here? It's not. I don't find this pattern here. I see phi, x and y, but there is a parenthesis here before it. Right? So she should not have replaced. It's fine that she should, it's correct, it's good. But then there's a simple solution. We just say, okay, what we really want is, instead of this phi, put a phi naught here. Then you will evaluate here the function phi naught. That's great. If you put a phi naught, you will evaluate a second derivative of phi naught. It's great. So what we want to do is just replace phi by phi naught, not with arguments. Okay? And this works. So she replaced, computed all the derivatives, and so on, and this is the result. Yes? Okay, so let me, okay, let me go there. So here you have a space missing. Derivative, but it didn't run this cell. You see, it was blue.
Okay. Yeah.
Can you try now? Yeah, so this was the example that was not working. Now if you remove the argument, it will work. Very good. So, but this doesn't look like a zero, right? We were saying this would give zero. This doesn't seem zero to me, right? This is not what we normally call zero, right? Conventionally. So what should we do? Simplify. Again, several ways of using simplify. Let me remind you. We can use simplify of this expression. That's one way of doing it. We can use, okay, it was not such a successful simplification, we must say. But let me remind you that we can also have done the following. We could also have done the following. We could say simplify. Okay? It's exactly the same. I prefer this, see, it, because then the logic of the order of the operations is more clear. I start with LX, then I replace 5 by 5, 5 by 5, 0, then I simplify. If I choose to read it in this way, I don't need to understand that there is, that it's easier to read the order of the operations. Okay, very good, but it's kind of hard to see that this is zero. This doesn't look very zero, right? Maybe we can try full simplify. I actually don't know if this will help. Okay. Wait. There's still here something strange. Phi zero. Because I didn't run this equation again. Sorry. So you probably didn't get something as ugly as what I wrote. Okay. So if I do just, sorry, if I just do simplify, I get this, which is already nice. If I do full simplify, I get this. Okay, sorry. So let me erase what is not needed. So this is the notebook. Okay, so great. So it's quite remarkable. If you just compute, let's just evaluate once with the right equation, LX, so we get this huge mess. It is indeed a huge mess, right? So it's very, very messy. But then we full simplify it, or we simplify it, and we get this nice expression. Right? And now, we want this to be zero, so what do we need to choose for C and D? For this guy to be zero, let's see. So here, you see, there is minus one plus fg square. The only way we can get that is if C is, so we want to flip and to put that stuff on the denominator, so this C needs to be I'm confused by this. Let's see. Okay, so let's try to replace C by 1. Okay. Well, doesn't work. C clearly needs to be 1, otherwise there's no chance. But then I cannot set this to 0. So it means I did a mistake, and I have to find it. Yes, I know where it is, the mistake, but... And do you have the same here? And you did full simplify, and you have the same version of Mathematica? Yes. Yeah, it can make a big difference. C, G prime, X plus 5. Yes, you have a space missing in the first F. In that F, X minus IY. You don't have a space between I and Y, so she's treating IY as a variable. Well, this is not a good ansatz. What would you do? So this is wrong. I forgot one thing. Suppose I have to find. I know it's almost this, but it's something wrong. What would you try to do? You can trust me. It's almost this, but there is something wrong. Where would you try to put one more parameter to play? Sorry? Square? It's exactly the good result. I don't know how you guessed. Where? Who guessed? Who said square? Very good. What's her name? Ashi Yu? Sorry. She knew? Okay, where do you want to put a square and what is your reasoning behind this guess? Yes. That's right. So it's exactly what you are saying. So it looks like this guy and this guy, they don't want to have the same power. They want to have different powers because here one of them comes with square, the other doesn't come with square. Right? So it looks like in my ansatz, I forgot to square one of these terms. Which one? Right? You understand the logic? So it seems like this ansatz was not so good. I probably should square the first one because I want this power to be 2 and this power to be 1. So if this power is 2 and this is 1, maybe there is better chance of working it out. Otherwise, I could open up the log and put 2 different constants, and that would take care of that, of course. But let's just try that. Let's try to see if we forgot a square. Okay? So if we run that again, following your good advice, then we see that if C is 1/2, and if D is 4, it works perfectly. Yes? Yeah, I don't know. I never know. It's like riding a bike. I have to go to the keyboard to find out. So let's see. So I select the expression, right? Then when it is selected, I clicked Control 6 to create a 2, to create an exponent, and then I wrote 2. So if you select an expression, if you have, say, 1 plus x over 2 plus x, then you select everything and put q. OK? Very useful to know shortcuts. Then you write it fast. Very good. Again, let me repeat how I could. Imagine I knew that to something like this. I could, of course, write c times log of 1 minus g times f plus c prime times log of g prime times f. And then having this extra constant is the same as having the square. And then I would find. OK. So this is an example of how, with Mathematica, we easily fix our typos and our factors of 2. This is exactly an example of factors of 2. It's all about factors of 2. We forgot the 2 in the exponent. There is 1/2 or 1/4. So it's a very good example how we can guess these factors of 2. Now that we know the factors of 2, we can just define it with the factors of 2. OK? I will erase the first line, but once you all finish copying. So you see that I am allowed to run this line without clearing phi. I don't need to clear phi. I can erase that line. Because now I'm not, if I ask, what do you know about phi 0? Well, there was a definition, but then I run another definition that overrides the second one. So she only knows the second one. So it's fine. OK? So I can type the first one just to remind myself that this constant C and D were fixed by something, and obviously it was fixed by plugging it into the equation. Okay. Okay, so this is a good example. So we learned, we checked explicitly that this phi zero obeys this so-called Liouville equation. Okay, Do you allow me to erase what is not needed? Yes, no, maybe? Very good. Okay, now we already checked the constant. Okay, who cares about, I mean, I recommend that you do keep the procedure to fix the constant, otherwise you can just erase to keep it clean, and if you forget, you can watch the lecture later. Okay, very good. Now, suppose I want to generate a function that I want to plot. So, okay, this is my general function, phi naught of x and y. I want to choose some wave f, some wave g, some function f, some function g, plug it here, and plot, do some nice three-dimensional plot with a function as function of x and y. Okay? This will be our analytic result. And then we will do some numerics and try to find that function again. So we want to replace this function f by something, and then we will want to replace g by something. So now let's think a bit about what is this something. What do we want to do? Okay? So we want to replace f by something, g by something. Sorry, you can remind me to zoom in if I forgot. I zoom out at some point to show you some tree, and I forgot to zoom in again. So we want to replace f by something and g by something. So give me an example of some function f. It can be whatever you want. Sorry? Identity. So just f of x equal x. For example. That's one possibility, yes. So how do you replace? So let's see proposals. So we have a proposal to replace f by identity. So f of x equal f. Another proposal for g. Well, some function. Someone tell me a function to replace g by. I might then in the end choose the function that I chose anyway, but I just want suggestions anyway. For example, good. G by g of x equal x squared. Okay, so we want to find this. The way I wrote this text was by using format style, and I used text. Text means that you create some cell that is not run. It doesn't run as an in, it's not an input cell. It's just some fancier than common stuff. Okay, so how do we do this? How do we say that f of x is x? Okay. So this idea. So how do we do this? How do we do this replacement here? F by 1? No. This will not work. Well, let's do it. 1 over 0, because, well, for many reasons. Because 1 prime, the derivative of 1, is 0. Right? And we add something like f prime of x comma y, and now you are saying f goes to 1, but the derivative of 1 is 0. So you get the function 0, right? So if a function is 1, derivative of the function is 0. You see that she puts 0 with this symbol saying, when you put prime, it means it's a function. So it's the function which is 1. It's the constant function, not the identity, right? It's the constant 1. The derivative of the function 1 is the function 0. So 0 with this means it's a function. It's the constant function. So it's very different than just 0, right? So 0. So if I say the function which is just constant 0 evaluated to x at the point x is 0. But 0 evaluated at the point x doesn't make sense. Saying a number evaluated at some x. So you see that this means the function. So here means this was a function. Finish definition of function. Okay? The function which is constant. The constant function which is whose value is 0. It takes an argument, it gives 0. Doesn't even care what the argument is. That is this, and when I evaluate it at 0, I get 0. So if I say that f goes to 1, I get, it's fine, it's a function. 1 is in the, I get 1 prime, and 1 prime is 0. Very good. So that doesn't work. So it's not f going to 1. What is it? I want f going to What do I want to do for f? F of x underscore goes to x. That's what you are proposing? Sorry, you have to set what? No, that will not matter. Because this is f of any argument goes to x, right? I can use z, right? F of any argument goes to this. So this will partially work. Let's see what it did. So it looked here, and this f of something went to the something. But it didn't work down here. Right? Why? Because again, this is not f of something. It's derivative, comma, f of something. Same thing as above. So she should not have replaced, and she did not. So let's see again. Let's see what's the full form of this. This is derivative with respect to first argument, okay, because there's just one argument, big thing, of f. And then this is a function of the product of the sum of x with the product of minus I, which is complex 0, 1, with y. Okay? So this is a complicated way how Mathematica thinks of this expression. So it is not f of something. You see, f is in between two brackets. F here has two brackets in between. So it doesn't work. So we have to do as above. So what do you propose to do? This is probably one of the fanciest things that we have to introduce. Yes? F goes to x. I think cardinal, no? It's cardinal, or what is it called? This symbol. Can someone tell? No, this is not pound. Pound is this one. This is ampersand, and this is pound, even though pounds use this symbol for pounds, no? Or no? No? Ah, this is different. This is for companies, right? No? Paul and company use this, no? No? Very good. Normally I call this company and I call this, I call it completely wrong names apparently. Very good. So, what's your name? Ruben. What Ruben was proposing is replace f by the argument of f. This was what we used for argument. But it's almost perfect. Almost perfect. So let's see. Let's do it a bit slower. Suppose I say replace f by cosine. Cosine is a function, right? I'm just replacing f by cosine. Then I compute, and she did it properly. She computed the derivative of cosine here, which gives sine. And 1 over sine is this funny function, cosec, or whatever it's called. So this was okay. And here is f of x. So she computed. So I replace f by a function. Now I want the function that does nothing, just a function, f of x equal x. So what's one option? One option is I define here the function, f of x equal x, and then I say small f goes to big f. That's kind of boring. I don't want to do this. That's not the way we are going to do, because then I define the new function, which I'm only going to use once. Come on, it's stupid to just have some capital F being something that might just to use once, right? So we want to define the function, use it, but not... Don't lose one line defining some stupid function like this. Just define it and use it immediately. That's what I taught you to do, how to define a function and use it on the go, which is f goes to, and here is the definition of the function, argument and definition of function. So I define, this is the same as the definition of a function. It gives the argument, and that's it, end of definition. And f becomes this function. And now if I do, it works. Let me just finish. And then g goes to argument square, okay, as Miriam was proposing, and that's it. So not g. Okay. Now she replaced these two functions by these two functions, and she computed the corresponding derivative. Yeah? Now it makes sense. Yes. That's right. So No, it's always parentheses. When did I use other delimiters? Sorry? We always use these curly ones if I want to give priority to some expression, if I want to separate some expression from the rest. This one, you mean?
Yeah.
This, yeah, but it's totally different. You see that if I have x plus 1 times x plus 2, right? Or let me see, what do I want to do? Say, for example, this. Or just this. This, I just put a parenthesis here. That is doing nothing. I can put an 8 here if I want. And this is what it is. Well, what's the full form of this? It's a product of 8 times this, right? Whereas it's a completely different thing to put this. This means a list with one element. Right? This is a list with one element. It's just a vector with one component, something. So if I multiply by 8, it is just the element. It's just this element. So this is a list. So here I'm saying this replacement is a list. So it's separated by commas. And when I have a replacement, I can put a list of several stuff to replace. So the brackets just mean some, just gives priority to stuff. And when you expand, they vanish. The curly brackets never disappear. They are a list. It's like you are saying that something is a vector or a column or something. It's different. That's a good question, though. Okay, very good. So we replaced by this function. Now we have a function, right? So we can call this phi 1 of x and y. Okay, so here is a function. Now I think because you chose functions that vanish at the origin, I think she will complain when I will ask to plot this, say from 0 to 1 and 0 to 1, because this will explode. So we will soon change these functions to something that is better behaved at the origin so that these logs don't complain. But let's just try to plot and see that it doesn't work. So how do we plot a function? Well, if we don't know how to plot a function, we try plot. Of course, plot becomes... So you see that, imagine you don't know what the function is to plot, right? I don't know, is there any synonym for plot? I don't even know. Probably not. Probably plot is your only option, right? You want to plot some function? Is there some other word that I could have guessed by mistake? Is there? Was someone native speaker, no? Is there some other word instead of plot? Graph. Does graph exist? So let's see, imagine we have graph. But then we ask, what is graph? And we see graph yields a graph with some edges and so on. So we see that she's talking about something else, right? Some drawing, some graphs. It's about drawing graphs with edges and vertices and so on. Nothing to do with plotting functions. Then we would go to our next option, which is plot. Now, see how when I write plot, for example, only, it's blue. Means there's no such function. Mathematics doesn't know what it is. As soon as I type the T, it becomes black. So there is a function called plot. Okay? So now I can ask, what is plot? Okay, plot of F, and then I put the argument and the range, plots the function. Well, but that's not what we want. We want something that takes more arguments, right? So we want x and y. So this is not good enough. So how do we find what we need to plot functions in three dimensions? Sum. What we do is we go to help. For example, we click here at the end, or we select and click F1. We go to help. We go to the bottom and see what other functions we might like. And we see here the fifth one, which is called plot3D. Okay? And of course, plot3D is what we want. Where is it? Okay, plot3D. And we click plot3D. And we get some information. And you see, plot3D is exactly what we want. We give some function, the range of x and the range of y. Okay, this is great. It's exactly what we need. Very important, again, let me emphasize, using help and going to this C also. So let's do plot3D, phi1 of x and y, when x goes from 0 to 1. And y goes from 0 to 1. Now, this cannot work, right? Because it's a complex function. You cannot plot anything complex. And indeed, Mathematica just gives me an empty square. I'm trying to plot a function which is complex. So we should plot something like, say, the real part or the absolute value or something that would make sense. So say, suppose I try to plot the real part. Okay. And this is the real part of the function. I can rotate, I can play with it, I can watch it. Okay? Now, I could plot the imaginary part. And I would get this function. And because log would become zero at some line, it would have some cut. So it's better to choose some functions that don't go through zero so that I don't have to worry about these cuts. So let's choose some functions that are not zero inside this rectangle. For example, let's choose the functions that I chose here. 1 plus exponential, for example. Let f be 1 plus exponential of 2 phi. This is one example, one function. And now g, notice something. Notice that if f and g are the same function, then g times f is the same as absolute value of f. And this is also something times its complex conjugate. So if I use the same function, this will be automatically a real function, which might sometimes be nice. You might have some reason to want to study some function which is real. So if you want something to be real, you should choose the same function for g. Okay? So if we plot this, this should be a real function. Okay? This doesn't look very nice. We can simplify. If we simplify, it looks somehow nicer. If we make full simplify, it doesn't look nicer. It's the same. And now we can plot this function. And this is what we get. We get some information about the quantum nature of the vacuum. All this bubbling. So what's happening? Sorry? It's just numerical error. You see that this is plotting something which is 10 to the minus 16. It's just zero. It's really the vacuum fluctuating, right? So this is because I chose f and g to be the complex conjugate of each other. So if I plot the real part, I get something reasonable. So this is a reasonable function. Okay, so that was just numerical error. I can increase the precision to see that 10 to the minus 16 go to 10 to the minus 100 if I want and so on. Now, there are many options. So if you ask what is plot 3D, and if you go to the help, you see that there are many options. So let me just, you can then play with it, but let me just tell, there is one option that what's the plot range? You can see, I want to see the full range of the function. I put all, then you see it goes to this spike here in the corner before it was truncated because Mathematica was choosing a different range. I can also say that the plot style, for example, blue is a 2. It's not drastic enough. I can put something red to make this, to make it, I don't know, more sharp. And for example, this is my plot. And I can save this as analytic. Now, this is our analytic plot of the function. And now the goal is, let's put a semicolon here at the end. We don't care to see what this function looks like. This full simplify works. Let me zoom out so that you can see the full notebook as of now. So this is the full notebook. We define a function. We define a phi zero, which is our ansatz for the analytic solution. We plug. We full simplify. It works. We fix all factors of 2. Then we replace some particular form of this wave, some f of g. We chose them to be the same so that the function is real. And then we plot the function, or its real part, it's the same. I can remove this real. Now, because the function is real, I think she will not complain, unless this numerical error will mess her up, but I think it should be fine. Yes, it is fine. Because now the function is real, so it's okay. And yeah, so here is the function, plotted between 0 and 1, and so on. So now the goal is to find the numerical solution to this partial differential equation. Now, there are many solutions, of course. It's a partial differential equation. You can think it describes like some shape of some drum or some shape of some minimal surface and so on. So you have to specify boundary conditions to select which solution you want, right? So it's like imagining you have some piece of rubber and you fix the shape of the rubber at the end of some big wire, right? And you want to find the shape in the middle, okay? This is how you should find the solution to this differential equation. So the rules of the game are, what we want to do is, we fix the shape of the solution at the boundary to be something like this, let's do the following. Let's use the analytic solution to fix phi at the boundary of some domain. This can be this square. So we fix the function at the boundary. We start with something here. We start with some phi, and then we will let this phi converge. Like we have some piece of rubber, we fix the boundary, we stretch it, and we let it go, and she will stabilize into the minimal solution. That's exactly what we are going to do. So we will fix the boundary, stretch it, and let the surface stabilize and see how it will exactly converge to this shape. So now we do numerics. Okay? Okay, so let me copy this differential equation. Let me close this section and paste it here so that we can look at it. Or I can just run it. It's simple. Then I see what. Okay? So I collapse the section. Remember how to do it. You right click twice on the bar at the very right, and that's collapse the section. Now I want to solve this guy numerically. Okay, very good. How do we solve this equation numerically? Did someone ever solve partial differential equations? Did someone ever solve this kind of equation? Runge-Kutta would not be so good, because Runge-Kutta, normally you use it to solve the position of some particle that you throw. So you fix the derivative on the function, right? And then you follow its evolution. That's not what you want to do. You don't want to fix at one boundary, throw, and let the equation evolve, then it will never end on where you want. You agree? You don't want to start evolving it, say, from this edge and letting it, and fixing the function and the derivative and letting it evolve. You only know where it ends. I'm not telling you what's the derivative. Okay? So it's a different kind of problem. It's a boundary problem, not an initial value problem. Okay? You see, I'm not telling you how the surface is getting out. I'm telling you it goes to this wire here. I stretched it. I don't care about the derivative, and I let it fall. And then at the end, I can find out what was the derivative at the boundary. But that's not an input. Yes? Discretize, we will do. Make it a matrix problem, we could. That's not the way we are going to do. So another option, yes? Finite elements, I think that's what this is called. I call it relaxation, I think it's equivalent. So what we are going to do is the following. We are going to discretize, and a nice way of thinking of this Laplace equation always, of this kind of problems which involve this relaxation, is the following. What is this Laplacian once you discretize? What is the second derivative? The second derivative is the following. A second derivative with respect to x plus a second derivative with respect to y. When you will discretize, and therefore you are evaluating it at this point, and there are these points A, B, C, and D, which differ by one lattice spacing. Once you discretize, so if this separation, say, is 1 over some B cutoff, okay, so we will separate our interval 0 to 1 into lambda elements, okay? And the same thing for this other direction, 0 to 1. So we will make a grid with lambda square elements. So if we have a point, then the second derivative is nothing but is nothing but this. So taking a second rivet means taking the average of all the points around the, so let me just see if this, let's see if this makes sense, the sign that I got. So what I'm saying is that it corresponds to taking the average of all the points around my center point and subtracting the center point. So it's the difference between the point and the average of the neighbors. Okay? So what you are going to do is you take a point, you see what's the average around it, okay? And then you see if this point needs to go up or down such that this equation is satisfied. Okay? This is what this relaxation of the surface means. So we will look at each element and see how am I compared to my average, to the average of the points around me. If I'm too high, it means I have to go down. If I'm too down, it means I have to go up. Okay? So solving Laplace equation means finding, for example, solving just this equation means find a function such that at each point, the value at that point is the same as the average of the 4 points around with some specified boundary conditions. So you will just impose that at each point, so you start with some random configuration and then update this guy here in the middle. Go over each point and update its value so that it has the correct average. And then do this several times until you converge to the right value. Yes? This? So if you have a function like this, right? The second derivative here being positive means that this point is smaller than the average of these two neighbors. Right? That's what the second derivative is. It's the comparison between a point and the average of the next one. While a derivative is not. A derivative of this being positive means that this point is bigger than this one. Right? So a derivative at a point is something telling you that this is positive. Whereas the second derivative being positive means that these points in average are bigger than this one. So this is exactly what it is. So the sign, I got the signs correct. I said that the average, if this guy is more than this one, then the derivative is positive. So I got the sign right. It's plus here. Right? Okay, so what we do is very simple. So what we do is the following. So we will make an iteration. Okay? We will make an iteration. And we will say that phi at the n, at the step n, okay, let me write and I think it will be clear. We say the following. We say that, let's call the numerical value psi instead of phi. Psi, okay, since I want to solve iterations, it's better if, let me solve an auxiliary problem first so that you get some experience with this, with how Mathematica works with this iteration thing. So you can say, imagine I define a function g of n, which is equal to g of n minus 1. You see, some I'm defining it g of n is equal to g of n minus 1 plus g of n minus 2, for example. Okay? So this is one possibility. I can do something more complicated, plus n times g of n minus 2. Right? So now, what is g of 5? Well, she got in trouble because g of 5 is g of 4 plus g of 3. What is g of 4? G of 4, g of 3 plus g of 2. Blah, blah. She went down until g of minus 246. Then she got tired and she said 256 is as much as I go. Do it yourself if you want to go on. Of course, I will not do it myself because I know this doesn't stop. Right? And I just go down first. So I have to say, but I will tell her that g of 0 is equal to 1, and g of 1 is equal to, say, 2, for example. So I fix the boundary conditions. I fix the first ones. Now I ask, what do you know about g? And what the Mathematica knows about g is the following. If I ask her what is g of 0, she gives 1. If I ask her what is g of 1, she gives 2. These are the most particular ones. If she first checks this one. If it's not 0 or 1, she goes to the next rule. So now it's fine. Now if I will ask what is g of 10, she will just compute. So let's try. What is g of 10? She will compute. Okay. What is g of 100? She will compute, but it's taking a long time. Right? G of 100 is taking a long time because 100, you need to compute 99, you need to compute this, and so on. Now, there is a way of speeding this up dramatically. How would you advise someone, if someone is doing it in paper, how would you advise someone to make a table, to compute G of 100? How would you suggest someone who wants to study this recursion relation to do? What you would tell him or her is, don't forget to make a table of the previous values. Save the previous values. Because suppose I asked you to compute G of 100, you computed, and then the day after I ask, oh, can you compute G of 102? If you didn't save the values, if you are going to do it all over again, it's kind of painful. So it's better if whenever I ask you to compute a value, you do it, but you also save it. So you add this value to this list of the values that Mathematica knows by heart without computing anything. So let's abort this computation because it's taking forever. So let's go and abort the computation. So we click evaluation, abort evaluation. Okay, it's aborted. So let's do that. Let's say there is these two dots here, which means you only evaluate g of n once I ask you. So only when I compute g of 5, you will compute the right-hand side. But what do you do when I ask you to compute g of 5? You define g of 5 to be equal to this. You see? This is kind of funny, this thing. So now when I ask, what is g of 5? Okay, Mathematica got here. G of 5 means I should compute whatever is here. Let me compute it. What am I instructed to do? Define g of 5 to be this. And now it was added to the list. So let's check this. Let's do this definition and compute g of 10. She computed, but now let's ask, what is g? Now she knows all the g's up to 10. Okay? And now we can do this g of 100 that before she was not being able to do, and now it didn't. In half a second. And before it was probably going to take a few days. Or maybe the age of the universe, I don't know. Very good. So this memorizing process is very useful. It can often really make a huge difference like it does in this small example. Okay? So I know this is kind of a fancy example, so I expect someone to have some question about this. So please ask now, well, what is unclear about this example? Yes? Why it computed faster? So what I did was, before, how was she computing before g of 100? I asked, what is g of 100? When she computes g of 100, she goes here, and she knows that she has to compute g of 99 and g of 98. To compute each of them, she goes here again and she starts computing G. She starts having this list, which is very, very big. And only at the very end, when she reaches the value that she wants, she will have some huge number of brackets. And then she will have to compute. So she will do a huge number of operations. Whereas now, whenever I ask her what is G of something, she would save that value. So she will not have to go all the way down. Because when I ask, what is g of 5? Mathematica is instructed now to run this stuff. But what is this stuff? This stuff by itself defines g of n to be equal, without two dots, to this. Remember, it's like on Monday when I was doing this shuffle deck. I said, shuffle, what is shuffle? Shuffle, it has two dots equal. And then after it has shuffle deck equal. So after two dots equal, I'm doing an assignment. It's exactly the same as here. Very good. So now let's use this trick to implement our iteration. So let's say that we will iterate, and we will have psi at step n at position x and y. It will be equal to, first of all, let's do this trick of putting here psi of x and y to save the values, to make our iterations faster, much faster indeed. Otherwise, it will be impossible to do. And then let's say, let's solve in terms of the neighbors. So we will have psi at the previous iteration, n minus 1, at the neighbors, of the neighbor up to it, 1 plus 1 over lambda. The neighbor which is below it, it's x and y. So this is the neighbor who is to the right, the neighbor who is to the left. Now let's do the neighbors which are up and down. The one who is up, the one who is down. Okay? plus 1 over lambda square times exponential of minus 2 psi of n minus 1 of x and y. So what I did here, probably messing up factors of 2, probably these factors of 4, no, they might be okay, yeah, it's probably okay. So what I did again was I discretized this equation. This guy is this guy, this second derivative is this first term, and what is missing here is exactly what is on the left-hand side. So I put this psi at the middle on the left-hand side, leave everything on the right-hand side, so I find psi by knowing it what it was in the previous iteration. Is it clear? So I'm saying update the point at each point by the knowledge of the neighbors and the source, which is this exponent. And all the signs and so on should be correct. If they are not, we will converge to something else, and then we can check. Very good. So this is the most important step. This is the only complicated one, in fact. Now, what else we have to do? We have to say, we have to put some lattice. Let's say we put 20 by 20, so we will have 400 points. That should be fine. Yes. This or G, this one? Yeah. Did you put underscore in the N? When you define G of N, did it have underscore? So G of N underscore, tag, tag, G of 0, G of 1. But can you run again? Can you show me where are the messages? Where do you delete? Can you write a G of 10, for example, now? Square. That's okay. It was previous error messages. Oh. No. Yeah.
Slightly previous thing, but my result is different from yours. I have no idea why. So.
I think I didn't. Did I define G of 0? I don't remember what my result was. It was not the same, really?
Yeah, it was instead of the two. So I thought it was the same.
Anyway. Let me run it, but we can check. Can you try clear the memory and run again and see? Okay. So does everyone have this iteration step implemented? So this is the hard part. Now it's the easy part, but this is the hard part, but of course this is obviously not enough. What else do we need? So who is typing still this expression? Quit kernel. No, quit kernel. No, there is no shortcut. But you go up. Otherwise, but you can often save when it is blocked. Still, you can often save. So, here I have Friday morning part one, and the symbol of Mathematica is faded out. Right? It's shady. If I save, it becomes darker. So, and often your Mathematica is crashed and you see that the symbol is light, and you can still click Control S and see that it becomes solid and you become happy. Yes?
So,
this? Yeah, these are all arguments. This is just arguments. You see, I could use, it's up to me to choose what notation I use. You see, the notation I have in my mind is The way I think when I write this, I think that I have some function psi at iteration n whose variables are x and y. Right? And then I chose in Mathematica to represent this by psi of n, and then each psi of n is a function of x and y. Right? Of course, it's my choice. I could work with something like this. And then I keep track that the first argument, this is absolutely equivalent. There's even a notation package if I really would like to see the screen like this. I could use that. You save often. You try to save. Sometimes Mathematica can still save. Or you quit the kernel. Quit the kernel is stronger than abort evaluation. Abort evaluation often doesn't work. Quit the kernel. So you go here, evaluation, quit kernel, and click local, which is the kernel that is running. And this will quit the kernel, reset all definitions, and you can start again. Then you run the notebook again. So sometimes you need to do it. When you ask her to simplify some huge expression that will never finish, sometimes she's really into it and doesn't want to stop when you ask, abort, 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 and she, please let me try a bit more, and you really want to abort. Then you really have no option, only quit the kernel. Yes? Sorry? Yes. This method? Relaxation. This is relaxation. So you have some equation, and you will let it relax. So we'll start with some random thing, and you let it relax. So this is called Very good. So this is what psi is. What do we need? What else do we need? So if I run this, what will happen? If I ask, so of course, I mean, this is implicit. The idea is that we start with some psi 1, which is equal to whatever we want, something random. This is like you put your surface on whatever you want. And the idea is that psi infinity is the same as our analytic solution. Whatever which ends on the square boundary condition. So we fix some boundary condition, we put something, and then let it go. And the idea is that if we run enough iterations, it converges to the analytic solution. Yes? No, it should be inside. Sorry? Yeah, it probably means that I have the fours are exchanged. Probably the fours are here and not here, something like that. Don't pay too much attention to factors of two. We are not using Mathematica to check them. So you see, the way you how would you check all these factors of two? You would first check on some simple example the discretization of derivative, right? So you just check to remind yourself if all the factors of two are correct. So then once they are tuned, that's fine. OK, very good. So what else do we need to tell about psi? So this is the most general thing. So Mathematica, whenever you will ask what is psi at some iteration number at some position, she will go here. This is the general one. But now we need the more particular ones. Like in this example, we need to tell what is g of 0 and g of 1. We need the analog of this for this more complicated example. So what do we need to specify now? Boundary conditions. So what are the boundary conditions? So psi at any iteration n, if you are at 0 and then at any y, right, what should this be? So it means that if you are on this left x equals 0 any y, means you are here. So if you are here, what's the value of the function here? The value is this phi 1 of 0 and y. Remember, phi 1 was our analytic solution. So we will impose that at the boundary, it's equal to the analytic solution. So we'll impose that the function here, it's always equal to phi 1, which was our analytic solution. And then find the solution in the middle. Is it clear? Our goal is to see that if you do this, at the end, we find in this phi 1. So when you have phi n of x1, 0, we say this is the same as phi 1 of 0 and y. Is this clear? Now let's copy this 4 times because we need the other 4 edges. 1y, it's phi 1 of 1 and y. X and 0, x and 1. Okay? So this is telling me that at any iteration, that part is fixed. I fixed the surface, I fixed my surface at the edges, that I never let move. And then, at any iteration, it's always equal to some fixed value. This is phi 1. So this fixes at the boundaries. And then we have the function psi. So let's call iteration 0 or 1. Psi at the first step of x and y. We have to specify the first one at any position. Let's say it's just 2. It's 2 everywhere. We start with some flat surface that, okay, it's flat except at the boundary that goes dramatically to the where it should go. Okay, so some function which is this random function here. I'm choosing a function that is 2 everywhere, equal to 2. Some constant here, except at the boundaries that it goes to where it goes. And now I will let it go down. I will let it relax. Okay? So now we run this. Let's see how it works. Let's compute psi after 3 iterations. Okay? At point, say, 5 over lambda. Remember, we can only compute at units of 1 over lambda. 10 over lambda, for example. Yes, thank you. Good. And now we ask, what is this value after the third iteration at this point, and it's equal to this. Okay? We can ask, what is the value after 10 iterations at this point? And it's thinking a lot. And it's giving me some huge output. You see, it's exponential of exponential of exponential of exponential. Some huge mess because of putting exponentials inside here and so on. So what do you recommend that I do at this point? It's kind of annoying to carry this huge expression. This is just a number. This is just maybe 1.35, whatever. So I don't want to carry all these analytic expressions. I don't want to carry this Euler number around. I want this to be a number. So we can, for example, just put some one dot here. Just by putting this dot means that when Mathematica adds pi to one dot, you see, whenever you put something which has a dot, you see, one is this. One dot is a numerical value. So one dot plus pi gives this. One plus pi gives this. You see? As soon as you are dealing with numerical values, it doesn't make sense to add a numerical value to an exact value, right? This doesn't make sense, right? Do you agree with me? You cannot add pi plus 0.1 and say that this is 0.1. As soon as you say that, because when you mean 0.1, you mean some numerical number with some precision. It's 0.1 with 30 digits of precision, say, right? So you see that when you have, if you have this, 0.1 plus pi or 1/10 plus pi is a big difference. 0.1 means the numerical value with which is 0.1 with 30 digits of precision, say. And this means 1 over 10. Okay? So just if you put a dot here in this 1, it will automatically, whenever computing this psi, deal with numerical values, and it will just give me numbers. But because she already saved a couple of values, it's better to clear all psi. Otherwise, the first ones will be now analytical, because now she already saved a few ones. So I clear it, and I add this extra dot. And now when I run this, you see it's extremely fast, and it just gives me now 1.95. Remember, I started with 2, and now it went down a bit, 1.95. So if I ask what's the value after 100 iterations, Well, it takes a while, but now it is a completely different value, 0.27. You see? If you ask what was it after 50 iterations only, now she already saved this value, so it will be immediate. And it gives 1. Okay? So we can make, for example, a table, n, comma psi of n, from n equal 1 to 100, to see how the value of the function at this particular point was evolving, and make, for example, a list plot. So you see the value of this function started at 2, and then as the iterations were going, the point was going down, down, down. It didn't converge yet. It's still clearly going down. We can try to run up to 200, say. Oops. Up to 200. And it's converging more and more. Okay? So it is relaxing to some value, which is the correct value. I can run up to 300. And yeah, now it's more or less stabilized. So if I would run up to 400, it would be okay. Yeah? So this is just an example. Okay. So you see, I ran up to 500. Now it's totally stable. Okay? So this is the final value of this function. It's what it is. So now we can, what can we do? Yeah. We can now, instead of computing it at a single point, we can compute psi at some point, at some iteration, m, at some point, j over lambda, k over lambda, and we can ask to compute at all points in the lattice. So we can plot x, which is k over lambda, k over lambda. So x, y, and z, okay? We can ask for the real part because there is some numerical error which is imaginary, but we know it is just garbage. So we can ask here for the real part of the component z, just to be sure. But we wouldn't need because it would be almost real. Then we can make a table. When j goes from 1 to lambda and k runs from 1 to lambda. So let's run here an example before. Table of some function h of ij when ai runs from 1 to 4 and j runs from 1 to 4. So let's run this. It gives this. And if you want, remember to see in some nice way to make sure this is a matrix, it will just give something like this. But okay, this is a good example actually. So if we run this table, it does generate all these points that we wanted. Imagine this was a 4x4 lattice, 0.11, 12, 13, 14, and so on. But so this is more like what we want. So we want at point 1, at x equal 1, y equal 1, you have h of 1, 1. Okay? At point x equal 1, y equal 2, you have position x, 1, 2. And so on. And now you would like to plot this. And you would like to some plot 3D. But if you ask, what is list plot 3D, which is the way to plot some list, she wants the following. She wants as to give her the coordinates in the following form, to give a list of xyz, 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 and so on. But here we have xyz, 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 but we have extra brackets here. Because we're making a table, so it's like a list of vectors. We don't want this many brackets. We just want a list of triplets. There are some brackets here separating in which line I am, but this, she will complain. What do you propose to get rid of these brackets? But flatten will be too drastic, right? So if I just apply flatten, now there are no triplets at all. Sorry? Very good. So now we can ask, is there something milder? So we ask, what is flatten? Right? Because we know that we want something like flatten. Again, we go to help. We ask, what is flatten? And here it says, flatten of something flattens out everything. But then here says flatten to level n. So it's like you go to the tree and remove some brackets at some level of our tree, but not everything. So we play a bit with this. If we don't know by heart, we try flatten, 2. And we see that this is flattening a lot, flattening comma one, and this is exactly what you want. Okay? So let me remind you what it was before. So it was this, and now it's this. If you ask what's the matrix form, or the table form, it's the same. So matrix form, this is this, so it's a matrix with vectors, whereas this, it's a vector with vectors. So this is exactly what we want. This is a list of three vectors. This is not a list of three vectors. It's an array with three vectors. But Mathematica asks for a list of three vectors, so it's the second one. Okay, so we want this flattened one. So we want to do the same here. So we want to do flatten level one of this expression. Do you agree? And then this will be the numerical values at, and then what we want to do is want to plot. So let's just plot. So we want to apply list plot 3D of this. And we can put some nice arguments, say plot range goes to all. And let me do something fancy, of course. Plot style goes to, let me put its opacity, 0.5. So let me make it slightly transparent. And this would be the numerical plot at iteration m would be this. And we can save it, not to compute this many times. So now if I ask what's the numerical plot after 5 iterations, I get this is the surface. Okay? So you see, when I ask numerical 5, what does she do? She computes this table of points, x, y, z, all the points at iteration number 5, and then she makes a plot of how the surface looks like at that point. So you see, it starts totally 2, but it's already at the edges, relaxing, already going down. Right? Now, we could want to compare this with the analytics. Right? So how do we show both at the same time? We use show. Okay, so here are the two. Okay. Here are the two, one on top of each other. What's wrong here? Here I started from one, I want to start from zero. Okay, so let's clear because now it's saved. I want to show the boundary as well. So you see it starts, indeed it goes to the boundary. That's why I made it transparent so that you can see the analytic solution in the back. But, and it's wanting to go down, but it's still very far away from relaxing, right? It's not at all the analytic result. Okay. But we can now evaluate this. This is a function. Okay. And suppose we evaluate it after 5 iterations, after 50 iterations, after 100 iterations, after 200 iterations, say. This will give me some plots. And you see that as it is evolving in time, it's perfectly converging. Tack, now it's smaller, now it's smaller, now it's perfectly. It's almost the analytic solution. Let's see how it is. See, you almost don't see the difference between the two, whereas here you see, oops. You almost don't see the difference, whereas if you do the same here, you clearly see that there's still a good while to go. Okay? So again, this was kind of fancy what I did here. I just said I define a function that asks what iteration do I want, and I apply that to each of these numbers. So I distributed, remember this slash at, apply it to 5, do it at 50, do it at 100, and do it at 200. Right? Apply this to each of these numbers. 5, 100, 5, 50, 100, and 200. Okay? So this is an example of a very short code. Let me zoom out. No, not zoom out. It's already quite zoomed out, but this part with showing this symbol function iterating, it's a bit irrelevant, but I will keep it if you want to see it later. But I will comment it. This is not needed. So I'm sorry. I apologize. Let me just zoom so that we can have a view of at the full code. I know this is too small. So we wanted to solve this differential equation. Let me summarize. You remember what it is, so I'll just summarize. So we have to solve this differential equation. We discretized in a lattice with 20 by 20 points. Then we had some code that says at any value of the iteration, at the boundaries, it's equal to something fixed that we like, our phi 1 of x and y, because it's our analytic solution. But it could be whatever I want, any shape at the boundary. At the first iteration, the first step, it can be some random function. I could put there cosine of x plus cosine of y, whatever. I chose two, constant, whatever. At step number n, update this function. Replace it by some average of all the neighbors, because the second derivative is nothing but the difference between the point and the neighbors. So replace it by the average of the neighbors at the previous iteration, of course, plus the value at that point with this exponential at the previous iteration, which is the source. And then update this, relax several times, and save the values so that when I ask you what is it, what is the value at a given point at some given iteration, you go and you start developing some light cone, right? Because at the previous iteration, you go to the neighbors, then to the neighbors, then to the neighbors. You start opening up. It starts depending on more and more points. And all those points are saved before. So you just use all this data that you already saved and find the value here. And when you go to the next step, you open again a new light cone. But you see you have two layers that you have to recompute. But most of the interior is already filled. You already know what it is. So it will be very fast updating the values once you know the previous one. Going to the next iteration, it's just linear. It's very straightforward. That's why this save thing is so important. Otherwise, you can try to not to put it, and you can maybe do three iterations or four, and that's it. And then we just made a table of these values at iteration number m. Once the table is done, we converted it to a list of triplets, which is what Mathematica asks to plot. We plotted it, and we made it transparent to compare with the analytics result, to the analytics. And then we showed the result. Okay. Decide on it. Okay. Now, of course, the power of this method is that this is what you would use, for example. If you want to solve, this is what you would use. If you want to solve some partial differential equation with this kind of boundary conditions, this is one method which is perfectly fine. Okay. People have been using this kind of method, for example, recently for studying some minimal surfaces in entity Sitter space in the context of ADS-CFT. So this is some nice method. So of course, you would first test it in something like this, something that you know the analytic result, like Liouville, like I showed you. We knew the analytic result. We used Mathematica to fix all the constants there. Everything was clean. We were getting beautiful zeros. We knew what we should get. Then we test the method. But now if I want, instead of e to the minus 2 phi, which is Liouville, if I want to put here, say, cosine of phi, of psi, then no longer an analytic solution is no longer available. If I replace this exponential by cosh or cosine or whatever. But OK, the numerical method is perfectly fine. Now I can rely on this numerics to find what's the shape of the surface. OK? Is it clear? Yes. This method is good when you have a boundary problem. So of course, this is not a good method if you want to, say, evolve Einstein equations or something which is a time evolution, not a boundary problem. When it's a boundary problem, It might fail if you have extra singularities inside, if you have sources which explicitly depend on the position of x and y and that contain, even if it's mild, but some singularities, then the method might become quite slow. But in principle, it's good. I mean, it should always work. There are some things that you can do to improve it a lot. For example, we chose a grid that is homogeneous. It's very useful to choose these points as zeros of some Chebyshev polynomials or whatever just to make it more efficient. So there is a huge literature now on how to make this method. This method, the way we implemented, it's convergent, I think, up to 1 over lambda square. So you would have to increase the grid size to, say, 100 to have 5 digits precision. But there are methods, for example, which use the same kind of method, which are exponentially precise. Of course, much better. So there are many refinements. This is the beginning. We start here, then we start putting other letters and so on. But whenever you have a boundary problem, this is quite good. OK. Very good. So there was something else I wanted to do. Yes, is there some question? Yes. Yeah, that's a good question. Very good question. Let me just convince myself that there's nothing else. Yeah, from here it's fine. OK, so after the break, we go then to answering whatever questions you might have in general about mathematics. So let's, how long are your breaks normally? 15 minutes. What?
15.
Very good. 15 minutes. So let's resume at 11.